since you came here as an intern, you could have worked on any number of aspects of the court. Mm-hmm. How is it that, you know, was there a point where you made a decision if you wanted to work on the defense, or you wanted to work on prosecution, or were you just assigned somewhere? How did that come about?
You know, I'd love to say it was a really conscious, well-thought-out decision, mm-hmm. but it's probably just, you know, that's what I was offered, and I wasn't even thinking of coming back that quickly, so I did come back. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, to be fair, I had lots of opportunity to apply for ALO. I like being on the advocacy side. So I worked in chambers, you know, which is so 6 months. I worked almost mm-hmm. 6 months in chambers, which is fine. But I liked the advocacy side. So the choice is really between joining a bureaucracy, which is a prosecution, or being fairly independent, you know. Mm-hmm. I really haven't had a boss in years. Not just here, but in others, you know, which is why it's hard to go back to firms and things like that. So it's really a choice of, you know, I love to say it was because I believe in one side or the other. I have no mm-hmm. problems on the prosecution or the defense. The only thing is in prosecution, I think they have a more difficult task doing, even if they want to do, and I can't speak for them, a more difficult task doing what they think is right because of the political imperatives that they function with them.
Mm-hmm. So when you think about the things you've done as a defense lawyer here, what are the things that have facilitated you, say, doing your job really well, and what are some of the things that have been barriers or made it harder to do what you would have wanted to do?
God. The structure is mad. You know, the legal aid structure here is just, it is really badly put together.
In what ways?
In every way. It basically encourages you to be, you know, encourages, wants you to be inefficient. We're only supposed to work 100 hours a month, that's all that we're paid for. And that's changed slightly now, but that's what the bulk of the case has been, which is ridiculous in some, you know, most months. It's just a ridiculous thing. The whole billing, we have to bill every time. Each member of the team bills separately. You know, there's a whole sort of the amount of time it takes just to get paid months afterwards to try and actually go meet a witness. You know, the bureaucracy, there are like 7-8 people sitting there. You should interview one of them really and find out what they do for a living. But which has been basically designed to stop us from, you know, and I'm sure there is abuse, but the system, the way it's designed, is not preventing abuse. It's just increasing paperwork. Mm-hmm. So the economics are really bad. And you can really get away by doing very little, but playing the paperwork game really well. So sort of the bureaucracy of it, you know, is terrible, which really hinders you from doing it. I think definitely, you know, I'll speak personally from my team, and I can't speak for other teams, is, you know, we could have had a full team working on things, and we've effectively had two legal assistants and who eventually became co-counsel working on the bulk of the case. So that, you know, we did a decent job, but, you know, it's when everybody's pulling their weight, there is a difference, and I've seen it in other places. What else? I think it would have been far better to have this case go at a more concentrated clip.
What would you have done to have speeded it up?
Well, we shouldn't have had long adjournments. You know, it's hard to sustain. You know, you go off for 4 months, you come back, and having to turn on everything again. You know, you're going, you get a momentum going, and then you stop, you go away, then you come back, you have 4 months off, 3 months off. So it gets really, really difficult to sustain everything. You know, you go off and you've got to do other things because you're not, you know, if you're billing fairly, you can't always just be working on a case remotely. So it's hard, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, if now they're doing that a lot more, is trying to have things mm-hmm. more concentrated, but still with multi-accused cases. I think it would have been far better, frankly, and I was just saying this, is for the judges to exercise control. If you're coming from the U.S. jurisdiction, you know what this is about. Don't put in stuff irrelevant. The number of times I've heard this, we're professional judges, we can figure it out later, you know. Juries need exclusion of evidence, we don't. The fact is, we end up with a case with, I don't know, 1,000 exhibits running in, some exhibits in hundreds of pages, 350-some days of trial. It's humanly impossible to actually go through that evidence. It's impossible. And they should have, you know, been putting blocks around, you know, what comes in, what's relevant, what's not. You know, we've had people testifying for days, and a month sometimes. One of the accused went for a month. You know, no limits on cross-examination, so carry on. Nobody gets limited. Repeat, everybody's got to get up and speak. Four co-accused, four counsel. Prosecution, really, really. I mean, sometimes, you know, I just want to be a judge just for management of the case. So really bad management of cases from
and
that
do
perspective.
Do you think that affects the defense differently than the prosecution, or are both sides sort of equally impacted by this?
I think it affects every team differently, yeah. Some people, you know, do it, but frankly, you know, one of the things that it's hard not to do is get cynical here, because you can really flow through, and I've seen teams flow through 5 years of it, with just being completely incompetent. And I just, you know, I don't have that many years in the bar, but sometimes you just think of, you know, and I'm the prosecutor in our case, in many cases here, entirely incompetent. I know that the prosecution closing brief is confidential, but there's nothing confidential about the fact that most of their references to their own evidence, and I've just wasted 5 days doing this, just, I mean, it doesn't help us in the closing brief, but just to give a little, you know, sling at them in the closing brief, are wrong. They just plain don't, either the witness didn't say what they thought they say they said, or they've just cited it wrong, or they've actually just made up dates which nobody testified on. So forget like the power of legal reasoning, just purely from high school editing standards. And they have resources, really, really, you know, sort of their batting order goes way down, P5s and P4s and, you know, so I'm not even talking about the strength of the legal argument, which is atrocious, but I'm just talking about simple editing. So when you have got to respond to this, you know, you just, you don't know whether to laugh, you know, how do you take something like that seriously? This is the case which has, you know, after Nuremberg, the first time that cabinet members are being charged for response, or Tokyo Tribunal, and this is a standard of advocacy. There was a time when there was one of the prosecutors who tried to, I think it took him like, I remember, because I've always laughed about this, it took him literally 10 minutes, and he just said, ask a non-leading question. He couldn't succeed. And finally, one of the defense counsel suggested it to him. So that's prosecutor. There's some very good exceptions, excellent exceptions, privileged to be in the court with them. A lot of defense counsel are just maybe not as bad, but also not good. Some of them are actually as bad. But